Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the podcast. This week, I'm introducing you to Arlene Miller, and she's such a great model for me. When I was talking to her and understanding what her life has looked like, I thought to myself, oh my gosh, this is what it looks like to forge your own path. And we have a really powerful conversation about that this week. And Arlene's miracle is a beautiful one. Now, there is a little bit of an Easter egg at the very end of this show after the credits, and it's one that I think draws into sharper relief Arlene's love for her father, but also what was most powerful and beautiful in her father's life. So with that, here's my interview with Arlene Miller.
When I was growing up, I can remember I was young, maybe, I don't even know if I was six. And we were driving down the street to our house. It was like little boxes, you know, houses, but it was a... All the moms stayed at home. Everyone knew each other. All the kids played in each other's backyards. And there was this one little house down this little alcove. It was brown. And I was sure, I was positive that I had been born there. And I can remember asking my mother, and there was no ever proof of that. But I was just so sure. I just couldn't figure out why I was born to this family. Myself as a soul, but I'll introduce myself as a human being. So on the ground, basically, I had a really normal childhood. I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky, the oldest of three. I've gone to uni and I have a political science degree. I've gone to law school. I have a JD from University of Kentucky. I've lived in Ohio, Kentucky, Georgia, and now I'm out in Colorado. I really love it here. And I've owned two businesses. I started my first one when I was 29, a solo practice in the law in Lakewood, Ohio, a suburb of Cleveland. And I sold that when my son was born right after I started my practice. So I had to balance motherhood, a new business. Thank goodness I was married then. I had a husband to put a roof over my head, but I didn't have any of my tribe. They were all back in Kentucky. So I had to build my tribe. And I sold the business and moved to Colorado with my son when he was nine and bought into a small boutique law firm. So I practiced family law, you know, divorce, dissolution, custody, all that kind of stuff. And I've also practiced commercial law, which is the phase of that was helping businesses collect their debts. People think if they have a product or service, they deserve to get paid. And when about 6 or 7 years before we sold our law firm in Colorado, it's in Longmont, which is about 40 minutes northwest of Denver. And I got a diploma in transformational holistic counseling and a diploma in coaching and mentoring. I got certified as a meditation facilitator. I became painfully aware of I needed to chill out more and be more of a have more of the left brain activated and not just the right, and how much I really needed to learn about how to listen, because law school did not teach me that. And I was negotiating settlements. I was the marketing person for the law firm, the primary one in Denver. And I was involved in all sorts of leadership positions. And I'm like, man, I could be a better listener. And by then my son was like in middle school or almost in high school. So learning how to listen to, a teenager, a middle schooler is critical too. So I got those. And then I love the practice a lot. I just sort of got burnt out. It's very demanding. You know, you can never leave it wherever you go. And I love coaching. I love mentoring. I love facilitating. I love speaking. And I'm just like, I'm supposed to move into this now. So I did. So that's the short story.
I really thank you so much for that. I have to ask you, I had a dear friend. I still have a dear friend, I guess I should say, who was a really gifted massage therapist. And one of her complaints was whenever she went to a party or a gathering, if someone found out she was a massage therapist, they would come up to her and say, hey, you know, I have this pain in my arm. Would you mind just rubbing it a little bit?
Oh, my God.
Was it like that as a lawyer? Would people find out and come up to you and say, hey?
No, because with the law, it's really interesting because you have to specialize. You know, so I knew stuff about family law. I know about Ohio family law. I practiced it for 10 years and I'm like, I have enough. Because I mean, I was like a guardian ad litem talking, you know, being like appointed by the court if the parents were in drugs or alcohol. And I seemed to track people that had drugs and alcohol problems and they had contested divorces. And I came from the middle class suburbs of Louisville, Kentucky, and was not trained in that. And it was overwhelming for me. But no, people don't, because in the law, you really have to specialize. If you talk to any attorney that's worth their weight in salt or gold or whatever you want to talk about it, they have an area of expertise. You know, it's not like with the old days where you were a GP, you know, it doesn't happen because there's no way that you could be competent in all those areas and be able to help people.
Okay. That totally makes sense. And lucky
Thank
for you.
For that. Yes. That would be horrible. I can't imagine anything worse, you know, than going to enjoy yourself and someone like trying to get an opinion from you about something. But yeah, no, that didn't happen.
Okay, good. I have driven through Kentucky, I have to say. I did a trip from Florida to Illinois, went through Kentucky, and I have to say that it is, well, I guess at the time of year that I drove through was around May. It was so green, so beautiful, so lush, horses as far as the eye could see. And I thought, this is a little slice of heaven. Were you, now I think there is a specific part of Kentucky which is dedicated to horses. And there's, yeah, ranches. Were you in that kind of area or?
I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky, which is not like that. We have the Kentucky Derby there and there are horses there and horse farms. Lexington has the majority of them. And that's where I went to law school. But yeah, there is a lot of beauty in the state and there's a lot of places you will find, you know, horse farms and stuff like that. It's horses like it there. It's moist, it's green, it's lush. It's, you know, it's a kind of an ideal place to have them.
Yeah. And I want to ask, cause I'm really jealous if the answer is yes. These fabulous confections of hats that they create for the Kentucky Derby. Have you ever had the chance to wear one of those amazing, glorious, fancy hats for the races?
I know that women do that. It's just not my thing. And when I was going to the Derby, I was like, I was like in high school and younger, and they used to have this huge infield, which was this crazy party where people would climb up the flagpole, which they ended up taking out and take off their clothes and wear them around because I'm older. And that's what happened when I was in high school. And it just was one big party. And I've gone to the Kentucky Derby in the fancier bits, but I don't want to put one of those things on my head. I'm glad that you do, but a lot of women do. My family members do that live in Kentucky. It's just not my thing. I mean, it can look gorgeous on people. They're amazing, but I just have never had a desire to do that. Sorry.
No. My desire is to have an excuse to have a hat like that created that's totally over the top and then just wear it all the time, everywhere.
I'm sure if you went to Amazon and typed in Kentucky Derby hats or in Louisville in Kentucky, just type Kentucky Derby hats, you probably would find something that would just make your heart sing.
Okay. I will do that. I'm counting down the minutes till this is over so I can buy a hat.
Okay.
Well, my second question for everybody always is, did you grow up in a religious household? And what did that look like your family and for you as a kid? And then how did it evolve over time for you? Maybe shift and change as you got older?
Well, that's an interesting question. No one's actually asked me that. So I was raised in a conservative Jewish household, and so it wasn't Orthodox. We could mix meat and milk. We didn't have two sets of dishes and all that kind of stuff. We celebrated all the holidays. My parents, all their friends were Jewish, and they're really a very lovely community. So on Christmas, we all got together and ate Chinese, which was fun. And So I was bat mitzvahed. That was when I was 13. I decided because the leader of the congregation when you're conservative is a rabbi and a cantor. The cantor is the one that does all the singing. And he was very, very conservative and thought that girls should not be, you know, all the boys were bar mitzvahed. It was like their rite of passage. They'd read the Torah. They'd lead the service on Friday and Saturday night. It's like becoming a man. And when I was young, that we were like the first generation. And the rabbi had three daughters and all of the three daughters were bat mitzvahed. And so he believed in it and he trained me. So I was bat mitzvahed. Much to my parents' dismay, when I was about 17, I didn't want to be a part of any one particular religion. I thought the traditions and like, I love the Passover Seder and the different things that the Judaism have and the music was lovely, but I just felt like being a part of any one particular religion just wasn't for me. And it's not that I think any religion, other religions, right or wrong. It just, I'm the one in the family that did it. My parents were horrified. But I just took a while for me to find a more spiritual bent. You know, I'm very connected, you know, to the planet and to, I mean, you can call it the universe, spirit, God, whatever you want. It's the same thing. It's about love. I just really didn't resonate with just being a part of one group. At the same time, my genetics are like 98% Russian Jew. So it's in my genetics. I feel it. I feel everything the Jews feel. It's just a part of who I am, and that's fine. It's just like, I'm not a practicing religious anything, but I'm very much into spirituality and doing my best to ground and express as much love as I can and to be the best person I can and to be of the best service I can. But I really don't talk about this very much because, you know, a lot of people that are in the Jewish community wouldn't understand it. And a lot of my friends still are Jewish. Because, you know, I was raised in I was in a Jewish sorority. It was just a part of how I was raised.
And it's not a question that people just randomly ask you on any given day.
Never.
Do you feel, now you were talking about this deep connection that you feel as a Russian Jew. Are you talking about a connection to Russia? Or the communities in Russia?
No, just that's my, if you do my genetics, it goes back to Russia and kind of that whole area. And it's like 98% of, I have some like Nigerian or something in there, somewhere in Africa, but 2%, but the rest of my genetics is that. So, you know, it's not necessarily that part of the country, although I don't really understand why they make Russia the bad guy. They're just people like we are, but it's just to the Jewish people, you know, the Jewish community, I can feel it in my bones, that connection that I have to them because I'm here in a body and, you know, both of my parents were Jewish. Everyone was Jewish back in my, all the way, way, way back because, you know, when my parents grew up there, you know, if you were a lawyer, the only thing you could do was, you know, form your own law firm. No one would hire the Jews or the Catholics. So when I went into collection law, you know, to help businesses collect their debts, I was like, the whole community of attorneys was all mostly like 98% Jewish and Catholic because it just went way back. That's where you could get business. That's what you could do unless you started your own firm. So yeah, it was, I don't know what I'm talking, where, how that all connects, but anyway.
Well, I think lineage and ancestry is so interesting, especially the stories that we carry as individuals in our bones, as you said, because I'm sure you have this deep connection to the Jewish faith, but I would suspect also the lineage of your Jewish ancestors as well, who emigrated out of Russia at some point. That area of the world and that community over there was so, and is so vibrant, so steeped in beautiful story and culture and art. And so, you know, even taking this step to, I mean, I suspect maybe your ancestors left because of persecution potentially.
I think it was something to do with they were inscripting young men into the army when my father my father's side came over a generation before my mother's side, and they weren't feeding them. They weren't clothing them. It wasn't just the Jews. And so it wasn't tenable. They were going to lose all their generation of men. And so a lot of people left. And I don't think they really cared if the Jews stayed anyway, because they were never totally intermingled with the culture. So that's why a lot of them came over. You know, it just wasn't tenable to lose all their sons to that kind of treatment.
Thank you for that explanation. I do want to just let you know that after I graduated from college, I had a full-time job, but you know, the hustle is real. And this is decades ago. And I worked for a company called A Touch of Help out of Chicago. And one of the things we did was, I mean, basically we would go in, set up for events, serve, and then clean up so that the host or hostess could actually enjoy the event and not have to worry and stress out. And so I was actually very privileged and very lucky to work at a couple of seders over the years. And they were so beautiful and so almost contemplative. I don't know if you would use that word, but the sense of the sacred was very palpable. And I always thought of it as such a huge gift to, you know, yes, I was there working, but to even be inside this home where this event was happening. But what I especially loved was all the generations at the table. Oh my gosh, from really little kids to elderly grandparents and great grandparents. It was just something to see the family coming together. That was probably my favorite part. But I always felt very, very privileged to be kind of I guess you could call it a fly on the wall of this really sacred event. And I haven't attended one since. I don't even know if that company exists anymore, but it did feel like a really rarefied space that evening. So yeah, thank you for letting me know about that. I'm grateful because, you know, even though Islam, Judaism, and Christianity all comes from the same kind of source, this same root, I guess you could say. Each one has blossomed out in different ways. That is, you know, some of them are somewhat the same. Those ways are the same, but there are some major differences. And inside each of them is great beauty. And I've always appreciated that as well. I am a panentheist, so that means that I believe God is in everything, that everything is sentient, that it is alive and it's waiting to talk to us. Very patient because it's taking us a while to figure that out. But I just, something speaks to me in all religions. I think there's great beauty in all religions. It is actually quite fascinating that you went from this choice of a career as a lawyer. And then, I mean, kudos to you for the self-care aspect where you recognized that this vocation was not exactly allowing you to chill out or rest or be calm, you know, take care of yourself. Was that a scary decision to kind of go in this other direction?
I really felt privileged with where the universe sort of sucked me into place with the practice of law, because in the law firm in Longmont, Colorado, which is like 40 minutes northwest of Denver, I became the person that helped to settle cases. So most of it was on the phone. We had two associates who did all the trial work, which is the most stressful thing. And my ex-husband and I, we got to go to business meetings all over the country and Europe and Canada, because there was organizations that brought together the attorneys, the collection agencies, the law firms that did collection, and that's how we would get our business. So we didn't get any business locally. And these people became like my family because I saw them in every meeting. And so I got to take my son, you know, to different places, and, you know, he would be happy to get room service while we were doing our things. And I take a day off and we'd go travel and we'd see really cool things. And so it was really good for him too. I practiced law for over 30 years. And then I just knew it was like when I sold my business to come to Cleveland and got my son and got my ex to sign off on that, which wasn't a big part of his life, but still he could have stopped me. I just knew that it was going to work. You know, my ex was going, his business took a little bit of a nosedive before I came out. He didn't know it was going to support us. I'm like, it's going to be fine. I just knew, because I knew it was the right thing to do. And I also just knew that no matter what happened, it was time to make this change. So no, I wasn't scared because it was like, this part of my life is over. You know, with coaching and mentoring, you can do it anywhere, you know, from the internet. You can set your hours. You know, you can't just flake people off, but it's a whole different deal. And so, no, I wasn't scared. I wasn't.
I wanted to ask, because you've referenced it, I think a time or two in this conversation, that, you know, you knew that things were going to work out in a certain circumstance. You had an intuition or a sense in another circumstance, things were going to be well, they were going to work out. Did you have this as a child? Was it something that you utilized as a kid, or did it kind of develop as you got older?
It developed as I moved along, because I was more, when I was young, I was really trying my best. I wanted to fit in. And there was a wonderful thing about being a part of that tribe. You know, it's just like, it gave you the sense of certainty. But when I was 15 and I felt like a download, be an attorney. And I'm like, what? It wasn't like, you know, God spoke to me or anything. I just had this really strong intuition that I wanted to be an attorney. And I told my mom and dad, and they're like, yeah, whatever. Well, there's no attorneys in our family. But I just really felt that it wasn't that I was so enamored in the law. I just thought, well, I can be of service to people. It was pretty practical and pretty right-brained at that time. Is that right-brained, the thinking? And I knew that as a woman, I could take care of myself. And I never really wanted to be in a relationship where I was stuck and had to stay there. And so it felt like it filled all the buckets. And I just thought, yeah, I wanted to go to law school. And so I did decide that at 15, and I did follow through. And there were people that laughed at me and thought I would never do it. Well, you know, I'm not a kid. I'm a baby boomer. And so, but by the time I got to law school, a third of the class was women. But yeah, I did have that when I was a teenager. And there was a lot of times where when I was younger that I would get a really strong feeling, don't do that. And I just overwrote it and did it anyway. And acts have consequences. And then I had to, you know, to work with that. So hopefully I've gotten better with that over time. But, you know, we're always works in progress. So, yeah.
Okay. I so resonate with that story of having that sense that this is not a good idea. This really is not a good idea. And then just blazing ahead, despite, you know, all these klaxons going off and a red light flashing and saying, not a good idea. And then you learn the consequences. You're like, oh yes, that is why. But I think I don't know. And then hopefully eventually you start listening and you're like, okay, if that's not a good idea, I'm going to avoid it. So I wish all of us had that kind of, sense, you could call it. I think there would be less sorrow in this world, or less accidents, or less whatever, mayhem, let's call it. Well, the central question of my podcast is, it's more of a statement, maybe a question and a statement. I would love for you to share, you know, it could be one story, it could be two stories, because this podcast is all about miraculous events, magical events, mysterious events. Some people have told stories about things for which there are no explanation. I would love to hear any stories that you'd like to share.
My goodness. It's not a big story, but I guess I feel like I've been guided a lot of my life and I've been looked out for. And that I always, when I was growing up, I can remember I was young, maybe, I don't even know if I was six. And we were driving down the street to our house. It was like little boxes, you know, houses, but it was all the moms stayed at home. Everyone knew each other. All the kids played in each other's backyards. And there was this one little house down this little alcove. It was brown. And I was sure, I was positive that I had been born there. And I can remember asking my mother, and there was no air for proof of that, but I was just so sure. I just couldn't figure out why I was born to this family. They were lovely people. I loved my parents. They were wonderful people, but I just always felt like I was a square peg in a round hole. And my brothers are lovely, warm, generous, kind people too. It's just, I've never felt really seen. And it wasn't anything that they did wrong. It's just, I don't know, maybe I was just a bird of a different feather. So I can remember that. And my mother, you know, I was like 5 or 6. She's like, you know, I just thought it was my imagination. And then she forgot all about it, but I never did, because I was still sure that I had been born there and someone had brought me over to another house. So it's not a true, I mean, it wasn't probably reality, but it was just sort of how I sort of was feeling, you know, growing up. Neither of my parents are alive now, but both of my brothers are. And like I said, I had a really loving, supportive family that I was raised in. It was just this feeling that I had about being this round peg trying to fit in the square hole of life. And why the heck was I here? And it just feels like, you know, I was looked after. Like I can remember, I've been married and divorced twice. And so my ex had my son on the weekends with his new wife and their new family, and I would have him during the week. And so I was in the office one weekend and no one was there. I was never there at 7 o'clock. The phone rang. I would never usually pick it up. I picked it up and it was this woman, and she wanted to get a divorce from her husband. She had no money. She was an astrologer. And for some reason, I just said, okay, I'll do a trade with you. And she did all these readings, and there was cassette tapes back then, and about me and my son. And it was, but anyway, she became my first teacher. She would hold classes on like once a week, and we'd all come in and she'd talk about something, you know, about just how to be better people in your life. You know, she would learn about the chakras, the energy centers, and all sorts of stuff like that, but it was really grounded. Yeah, she got remarried and I was her matron of honor, and I got remarried and she was my matron of honor. And it was just like, I learned so much from her, and I got so much a greater sense of self-acceptance of just being, this is who I am and this is where I'm at, that I'd never really had before, and had someone that was a few steps ahead of me to guide me. Yeah. And I've just had situations like that, you know, in my life. And like I shared, you know, when I was going to move out to from Ohio to Colorado, she was the person standing beside me. And I just got this inspiration, you know, what I needed to share with my ex, which was basically reducing his child support to let me go across country with our son. Cause he had 3 other kids by then, they just slammed him out. And he wasn't a bad man. He was a really good man. He just wasn't my man. So I just had someone there, it felt like, or an energy there most of my life just to help. And it doesn't mean I didn't make lots of mistakes. You know, looking back on some of the things where I blocked everything out and just did whatever I want and, you know, consumed alcohol or whatever else I did so I wouldn't have to listen to my conscience and what spirit was really saying. Well, you know, like acts have consequences, like we were talking, but I'm just really grateful for this life. I don't know if that's a real story, but I think what it comes down to is that I just had so many interesting experiences and so much opportunity to travel and learn about other people and to be of service, but have fun at the same time, even if the law was stressful. Yeah, I'm just so grateful.
Yes, spirit can be a nag.
Well, if we listen, things can go a little bit more smoothly. I mean, there's lots of mistakes that I made, especially in those teenage, early 20 years, that I was a little bit of a wild child, you know, rebelling instead of like going, you know, anyone, because I took everything on and I had to vehemently push everything off. There is a better way. You can just go, they can believe that. You don't have to say it to them, but that's just not the truth. Hopefully next time around, that's where I will be at. But yeah, I guess that's what I feel to share.
I was going to ask you, and I think you've answered it already. You know, do you feel like this, I don't know, this presence, this voice, this counselor spirit, I was going to ask whether you think it's an internal thing, like your own intuition, or do you have a sense that it is external to you?
I would say, you know, you're asking me for how I feel. I feel like Gaia, the being that embodies planet Earth, gifted us these bodies. We're made up of what she's made of. And the more awake we are, the more the greater being that we are can descend and then anchor into the heart of the planet. And so it's always an ongoing process. And so the greater bit of us that can anchor here, however much that is, depending on how much love we are and how much we can get out of our own way, it's a part of everything. You know, it's a part of who I am. So nothing's really external. You know, I think that there's just so many separation energies on the planet right now of trying to get, instead of people coming together and making decisions for the greater good, we're being taught that if this person has this view or this person has that view, that we need to be antagonistic. And I don't believe that that's the way things are, you know, and that this is just, it's very dense in these bodies, but
yes,
how much we can embody the greater bit of us, which is a part of all that is, nothing's really separate, really depends on, you know, how awake we are and how much we can stay out of fear and in love. And I am, like I said, definitely a total work in progress with that. I don't know if I'll ever not be.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Fear, I think, is really easy to slide into. Love, you have to work at. But I feel potentially the longer and longer you work with love or try to stay anchored in it, try to stay centered in it, the easier it is to access and maybe carry it, you know, in your day-to-day life as your way of being in the world. But man, fear is, it's really powerful. And as I said, easy to kind of slide on into. And before you know it, you've fallen out of love and you're just in this place that probably feels a little comfortable because you've been in it several times before, hundreds of times before. And I think you're a perfect example of someone who, I mean, through all your stories and through all everything you've shared, now you're in this place that you operate from that's really abundant and beautiful and bountiful. And you hold it so lightly. You're not clenching onto it. And I think you're a great, perfect example of how to do that. Has anyone ever told you that before?
Oh, people do enjoy being in my presence when I'm sharing this stuff because I am a couple steps ahead of whoever I'm working with. But what I would say is what I've really learned in this lifetime that I'm always practicing is that feeling is healing, because I wasn't really I was taught that a lot of feelings were bad. And so if I have all this fear coming up, it just could be that I'm ready to feel it and move it away. Maybe, and what I do also is I cut energetic cords. I visualize a cylinder coming down and cutting energetic cords that are not about love, because anytime you talk to me, I talk to you, someone thinks about me, I think about something, there's energetic connections and I don't want that energy dumping into my field. So I have a very strong practice of how to energetically cleanse and clear myself. And, you know, some energetic connections can't be cut and you can flood the violet flame through it and cleanse and clear them. So part of it is just energy taking care of yourself. But also I always used to try to push away all those quote bad feelings, and they'll just kind of ricochet and kind of really come back harder. So if you're holding a big space of love, and it's not always easy to do, you can just feel them, allow them to move through you. And if you're working with the universal violet flame, you can flood yourself with it. And then it's going to be transmuted and transformed into love as usable energy for the planet. You know, just this big cylinder of energy. So, and then you can call in the light and love as source to fill yourself where that fear once was. And so the more I do that, and more practice makes permanent, and the more I'm not, you know, sometimes that fear that comes in, it's just like, holy cow, it's ready to mow you over. But maybe it's been stored in your cells and now you're ready to deal with it, especially if you cut those energetic connections and you flood the energetic connections that can't be cut. And you know that this is your stuff. And also another thing that I do is that, you know, what's mine is mine, is yours, and I send it back. Because if people dump in my energy field, they try to suck my energy, no, and I'll send it back, and then I'll flood myself with love. So I do have a very strong practice of working with this, but I think the mistake is that thinking that there's bad feelings and we just want to push them away, because they're not going to go away. And if they're ours to clear in this lifetime, we have to hold that space of love, let them move through, let them emote stuff, let them go, fill ourselves up with more love. And as we let them go and they become love, if they're meant to be here, they'll come back. Otherwise, they'll go back to where they belong in the time-space continuum. So hopefully that wasn't too out there, but I felt to share that.
No, not at all. I was actually thinking that you and the violet flame are probably the prescription that we all need all over the entire world. I mean, if you could just dispense those scripts at your convenience, that would be great.
Well, I do too. Teach free spiritual classes every week on Tuesday from 6:30 to 7:30 in Colorado time. They're free. If people contact me, I'm happy to connect them up with that. So that's sort of my service work.
Thank you for that. I have to say that I love this conversation, and I'm so, even though it took us a couple times to get together, this is exactly what I needed to hear today. And I suspect it's exactly what so many people need to hear these days, especially in the States. I mean, you'd have to be living in a cave to not really comprehend that things have gone a little bonkers here. And like you said, the divisiveness, people against people, group against group, it's kind of escalating only, it seems. Whereas I'm always on air on the side of making new friends. I really like that. I'm like, let's be friends. I think we're in a really challenging and alarming and trying time all over the world, not just in the U.S. And I think it behooves us to access people like you, doing work to bring people together, but not only that, get rid of our gunk and start working with spirit. So thank you for the work you're doing in the world.
Thank you. And you know, what we can all do is hold the ideal and not be sucked into that quagmire, because to me, it's like I'm a salmon swimming upstream. I got to see salmon swimming upstream one time. I went to Juneau. Amazing. Amazing. It's like, oh my God, this is so cool. But we can hold that ideal. You know, we can, if we're seeing all this divisiveness, you know, we all put on our pants or our skirts or whatever the same way. We all eat, we all poop, we all do this, all these human things. We're family. And so if you visualize that ideal and flood spaces where there's a lot of divisiveness with the violet flame, and then visualize that, you know, peace and harmony, you know, we can play our part in that and not buy into all of that. And the more of us that hold that ideal, the stronger it becomes. I mean, look what happened when the truckers had their strike and all those truckers came together. The people with their hearts open for the common good of all concern and saying no to things that aren't, you know, about that can make a big difference. It's just we have to do it together and not see the other person as the enemy if they don't have exactly our same philosophy of life.
I have to say, I really appreciate that image of the salmon swimming upstream, because salmon, first of all, are their life journey is really mind boggling for me. You know, I left home and I'm like, I don't want to ever really go back to Illinois. There's not really anything for me there. So the fact that salmon actually, you know, go out, have an adventure for a while and then return home to spawn and then die is a really powerful one. Especially with, if you think of the image of the salmon returning to the place, because we've been talking about love, this operating out of this space of love or this energy of love. And it's like the salmon returning, they're teaching us how to go back to the place of love, you know, because that's where we'll all end up eventually after we get rid of these really dense bodies, these bodies that are so very temporary. And so thank you for that image, the salmon returning home and that place being of love. Wow.
I just want to share one other thing. You know, people are always trying to get away from Earth and these bodies, but we stand in line to come to be incarnated here because we can learn so much more than when we're informed than when we're not. We chose this. We chose our family. We chose our situation. We chose our circumstances. And so we're here for a reason. It's not some happenstance thing. And so instead of just wanting to get the heck out of here, the more grateful we are, no matter how challenging or difficult the experience is, and we all have had some stuff that's just horrendous. And it feels excruciating and our heart is breaking. But you know, when our hearts break, they are open to more love. So, you know, any disaster can be turned into a blessing. And it's important not to judge these bodies. They're a gift. Or judge that we're on this planet that could be, you know, that maybe used to be really bright and a sacred planet and is not right now. You know, we're obviously here for a reason.
Kiddos, my interview with Arlene. I hope you enjoyed getting to know another member of the human race that's out there and creating more beauty for every single person that's around them. Please do yourself a favor and do a deeper dive on Arlene. There will be a link in the episode's show notes. As well, I would love it if you liked what you heard. Please do consider leaving a rating or a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thank you for listening. And here's my one request. Be like Arlene. Forge your own path in this life. I mean, Arlene really created a life that was full of dynamism, that was full of her own trademarks. And even though she opened this law practice and she got pregnant right away, she still forged her own path. I mean, at that time, considering that Arlene is a grandmother now, she could have stepped back and said, hey, I'm just going to concentrate on being a mom. I'm going to step back from everything and just be a mother. But Arlene refused to do that. She said, the rules don't apply to me. And guess what, babes? The rules don't apply to most of us. They're just these weird social constructs that we kind of seem to just accept as the kind of bumper rails of our lives. So what does it really look like to kind of demolish those boxes that society and our culture want to keep us in? Well, I think we can look to people like Arlene to figure that out. So what are the rules that you'd like to break? What are the bumper rails that you'd like to demolish? I think this world will be a whole lot more beautiful if we broke down those boxes society would rather we stay in and we live our own original lives. So with that in mind, I hope you have a beautiful few next days. I have some incredible guests coming up and you enjoy the rest of your weekend. See you next time for the very next episode of the Bite-Sized Blessings podcast.
Thank you. What a perfect way to end the podcast. I think that's such a perfect reminder. Thank you, Arlene. This has been such a great conversation. Thank you for agreeing to be on the show. It's been really wonderful getting to know you.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yes. Okay. Thank you, Arlene. Oh my gosh, this was great conversation. Thank you for entertaining my questions about Kentucky Derby hats and also about growing up in Kentucky and how lush and green and the horses and all of it. I never know what kind of flights of fancy my inquisitive mind is going to take, but you handled everything with such aplomb. So I'm grateful. Thank you.
It's just really interesting that no one has ever asked me about my religious roots. So that was really interesting to share that. That was quite the journey, because I'll just share with you, the Passover Seder was one of my favorite things. My father was always at the head of the table. The afikoman was, you know, the unleavened bread. And so he would always break a piece and give it off to the youngest person who had to read the four questions in Hebrew. And then he would give him a couple of dollars. And that was a lot of money back then. And my father loved that role. And my mother would always, you know, my mother wasn't the greatest cook. She would have someone come in and do all the cooking for us as well. And it wasn't a huge, big celebration, but, you know, the family was all there. And it's one of my favorite memories from my childhood. You know, it was just a really, I mean, I can't say that I loved all the food, but like the gefilte fish. I mean, I'm not sure how I used to eat that stuff, but it was just a really cool thing. And just to, my father just got, you know, he was in his prime when he was there, and it was just, he just loved all that.
Well, I can imagine, you know, I love my family, but I did move away for a reason. And that event, you know, when I was able to witness it, these couple of times that I worked those events, it was clear that part of, I mean, the most sacred part was almost the family coming together and being in the same space together and sharing this ritual, sharing this time together. I've never had gefilte fish, and I've been grateful to never have to eat it because it just did not look like my cup of tea. But I'm weird about food anyway, so who knows?
Well, I just wanted to share that with you because you really enjoyed that. And, you know, that's, you know, some of those traditions and stuff that we did, you know, my parents haven't been alive for quite a while. And those are really fond memories.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. They're like ceremonies or rituals that are snapshots of our lives. I find that, you know, I've forgotten most of the day-to-day of my life, thank God. But, you know, Christmases or Easters or certain events, they kind of, some of them become crystallized in my memory so that I can go back and relive those moments or that feeling. I loved when you brought up feeling. Oh my God, so powerful. What a great reminder. I needed to hear that today too. So thank you. I think our culture is so cerebral in so many ways, and everybody's on their tablet or their phone or their computer or whatever. And feeling kind of gets left, I don't know, at the door or isn't even considered as something that's important. So thank you for bringing that into. I thought that was really, really powerful and a reminder. We all need that reminder that there is another way to be in this world for some of us.